Welcome back to The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. Suppose there's this woman living in a nation that's undergoing a prolonged civil war. There's bombings, militants, rape is being used as a weapon, food and water are scarce. The only way for this woman to survive is to leave and then go where? Well, the refugee camps aren't that much better. But if you go across the water, there is a nation that is safe with abundance, health care. There's the rule of law. All you got to do to access this wonderful world is to get there. So that woman decides to become an immigrant. But does she have the right to enter a new nation? What are her rights as a refugee, as an immigrant? And what are the rights of that nation to turn her away and say, we don't want you to join us. We don't want you to be one of us. David Miller writes about this in his new book, Strangers in Our Midst, The Political Philosophy of Immigration. And David Miller is a professor of political theory at Nuffield College in Oxford. And welcome to The Source, Professor Miller.
Thank you very much. I'm very pleased to be talking to you tonight.
Our phone number is 210-614-8980. We invite you into our conversation as we talk about the ethics of immigration, 210-614-8980. And if people have the right to immigrate, if it is a human right. And David Miller, is there a human right to become an immigrant?
There isn't a human right to immigrate in general. I think the first thing we have to start doing is talk about different kinds of people who might want to immigrate. When you're in your introduction, you talk both about refugees and about immigrants generally, and I think we do need to keep those two categories separate, because refugees, of course, do have human rights claims. Their human rights are at risk as long as they remain in the kind of circumstances you were describing. But, of course, that won't be true of immigrants generally. Immigrants generally are people who have searched for a better life. They have entitled to try to get one, but they don't really have a human rights claim to support them. So I think we have to begin by separating those two categories.
The issue of fairness. I always hear fairness being brought up as we talk about immigration. In many ways, people say, I wasn't born here, but I was brought here as a child. I had no say in the matter. I grew up here. This is the only country that I know. It's only would be fair to allow me to remain or even become a legal resident, much less a citizen. But, and then we also hear the question of fairness. Well, I did it the right way. I filed my papers, I was accepted into the country, and they deemed me and my skills valuable, and I was allowed eventually, after many years, to come into the country. And everyone's got a fairness question when it comes to immigration, and I think that's what makes this so complicated.
It is indeed, and I think, again, you've put your finger on a really acute dilemma, because people who've lived in the country for years, perhaps been brought up there, I think that these people do have the right to become, in due course, full citizens of the country, and there must be a route for them to do that. On the other hand, we have immigration procedures. We have people are selected according to their merits, the kind of contribution they can make to the society, and we have to keep that system integral. We can't We're going to have a system of priorities. We have to stick to it. So I think these two imperatives become very problematic in cases where you have a large-scale illegal migration, in such that people do end up living for many years in countries where they have no legal right to be. So I think this is really an argument for having a better and more effective system of border controls, so that you don't actually get many people in this position.
The nations like the United States, or even where you are right now in Great Britain, you have to wonder about the responsibility of the nation, particularly, okay, like Syria or Iraq. You know, our two nations took up were You did the invasion and to overthrow Saddam Hussein, and eventually that resulted in the rise of ISIS and what we're having now with in northern Iraq and the refugees coming from there and from Syria as well. And then there's the questions of what we do and what we choose not to do in terms of restoration of peace and stability in that region. So, and by doing so, by being a nation of great resources and wealth, and also one that seems to cause trouble or you know, do things around the world, what kind of responsibility do we have to the refugees who are who come from that?
Well, we do have responsibilities. I don't think that we should think necessarily that we're the guilty parties. I think these interventions are very problematic. It's often very easy to say, with hindsight, that we made mistakes here, we shouldn't have gone in there, and so on. Often, looking at it in advance, it looks like the right thing to do, and I think we're very torn about the case of Syria. So the reason that we should do something is not because we've made some kind of huge moral mistake. It's because we do have the capacity to help. And so now we're back on the question of refugees. And I do think we have a special obligation to take people who are refugees. And we perhaps have a particular obligation where we are perhaps the unwitting reason that's made them into refugees. But, of course, this is something that no one country needs to assume the whole responsibility for. It is, in fact, a shared responsibility that ought to be addressed by creating a proper, orderly system for taking people and resettling them in different countries under a kind of, under an orderly system of resettlement. So I think that we do have responsibilities here. But this is not to say that we should just have a completely random sort of free-for-all where people randomly move to one particular country. I think it needs to be a system of distribution of refugees.
And where does that responsibility end? If someone was a refugee in Syria or Fallujah and they've lost their home, they lost family members, they lost their livelihood, they've lost so much. I mean, allowing someone to come into our nation and to take a job, driving a taxi or something, that doesn't seem like enough. You can't make that person whole again.
Well, I think that many people will actually want eventually to return to their homelands and to help rebuild them. And part of our policy should be to encourage that to happen. So we provide temporary refuge for perhaps 5 years to people in the hope that they can go back. Now, if that's not the case, even for some reason or other, that is never going to happen, then I think we do have a positive responsibility to help people to integrate, to make a new life in the new society. We should provide them with language classes, we should provide them with job training and so on. So I think that we do have these responsibilities in cases where people have come and they have to stay. There's no real realistic possibility that they're going to return. So, yes, I mean, we do have responsibilities to them, and we must carry them out.
All right, we're speaking with David Miller, professor of political theory, and we're talking about his book, Strangers in Our Midst, The Political Philosophy of Immigration. As we talk about immigration, it's becoming a more heated issue, not just for here in the United States, but also around the world, may have played a role in Brexit. We invite you into the conversation, 614-8980. This is The Source. You're listening to The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. A person does not have the right to immigrate to a new country just because they want to be in another place. But what about the right of a country to turn immigrants that it doesn't want away? How strong do we have that right as a nation in order to protect our self-interest and our self-identity? As conflicts and climate change causes more people to flee their homelands around the world, what is the moral responsibility of a nation state like the United States to open up our borders? We're speaking with Professor David Miller, author of Strangers in Our Midst, The Political Philosophy of Immigration. So, Professor Miller, you really wanted to take a practical point of view talking about immigration and the philosophy and the ethics behind it. And as a practical point of view, we saw what that can do with the Brexit vote that happened in Great Britain and your homeland. And immigration had a lot to do with that.
It did indeed. Immigration was one of the main issues that people were raising in the course of the campaign before that vote. Of course, your listeners probably know, but just to remind them, that within the European Union there is at the moment freedom of movement, which means that from the 27 other countries in the European Union, people can move freely to Britain to find work, and they have done so in quite large numbers. So although overall that isn't a problem, and I think that the movement of people works reasonably well, there is a concern that it can't be controlled, that there's no way of breaking this movement. And I think this was one of the issues that lay behind this rather surprising, I think it caught many people by surprise, vote on the part of the people to leave the European Union.
And the working class people and everyday kind of guy in Britain was saying, this has got to stop. This has become a problem. This is interfering with our national identity.
Yes, I think something along those lines. I mean, there are problems of overcrowding in some places, in schools and hospitals. Some neighborhoods are changing rather fast as large numbers of people move in. People see the shops changing, the newspapers changing, and so forth. And unlike the United States, we're not historically and traditionally a country of immigration, and so people perhaps are not used to this happening in their town or village, and they feel a sense that it's out of control. Now, whether, of course, leaving the EU is going to bring that control back is another matter. I think this is still something that will need to be addressed, and perhaps people thought rather naively that just by voting to leave, this would instantly solve the problem. If they thought that, I think they're going to be disillusioned.
All right, let's go to the phone lines. The number is 210-614-8980. If you've got a question or a comment for David Miller, author of the book Strangers in Our Midst, The Political Philosophy of Immigration. And Jared has called in. Jared, hi, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi. My comment is I think we do have a responsibility to help the refugees, at least from Syria, because in Syria, I mean, from what I understand, Assad is causing the vast majority of the refugees. The vast majority of the refugees are Sunnis running away from Assad. And we're in Syria, but we're not willing to touch him in any way. And so I think because of that, the fact that we're in the country and we won't get the guy who's causing the vast majority of the refugees, we have a responsibility to help them.
All right, Jared, thank you for the call. It brings up an interesting issue. Assad has been accused of weaponizing refugees and making them flee into Europe in order to force the Europe to apply, to back off the problem, Syria. So there's a lot going on there.
Yes, it's indeed a very, very complex situation. I think it's probably hard to say who is mainly responsible for the refugee flows out of Syria, because obviously the so-called Islamic State on the other side are also terrorizing the population. So it's a mixed picture. But I think in the long run, large numbers of people have to be supported in countries close by Syria in the hope that one day at least, and hopefully not too long in the future, it's going to be possible to rebuild, because Syria is going to need very badly people with skills and talents to create a new Syria out of the ruins that we see before us now. So although some people will be fleeing directly from persecution by the Assad regime, I think many of those who are just displaced by the civil war are people who ought to be encouraged to return to Syria as soon as conditions make it possible to rebuild, and perhaps meanwhile would best be housed in properly resourced refugee camps in neighboring countries.
I'm looking at the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, Article 13, and it says that everyone has the right to freedom of movement and residence within the border of each state, and everyone has the right to leave any country, including his own, and then return to his country. So that would be a violation of the refugees' rights if they wanted to return to Syria and then Assad began to cherry-picking who he would allow back in.
Yes, it certainly would. I think the right of return to your native country is an important human right, as indeed is the right of exit. So any settlement in Syria would have to obviously include that as one of the components.
Okay, and you write quite a bit about closed borders versus open borders, and that is a debate that's had here in the United States, and people have accused some conservatives saying that the United States basically has open borders, particularly on the southern border. Is that what you would consider to be an open border?
Well, I think it's not an officially open border. It's a border that you do need permission to cross, but of course it's very hard to police since it's such a long stretch of open land. My argument in the book is that states do have the right to control borders, but admitting immigrants has to be seen as, in the long term, a way of remaking the citizen body itself. And I think that the citizens do have the right to say who's going to come and join them in general, decide how many people they want to come, what kind of people, what kind of skills they have. So the book, broadly speaking, defends the closing of borders. Of course, that doesn't mean that you can use any means, however brutal, to stop people getting in, nor does it mean, as we've already said, that you can turn away people who are genuine refugees. But subject to those limits, I would want to defend an immigration policy that does select who comes in, and to that extent does involve controlling borders.
Okay, another caller, Kathleen. Kathleen, hi, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi. I just wanted to make a comment. I am a legal immigrant. I had my U.S. citizenship for exactly 1 year. I went through the process. Coming from Canada down to Texas, I'm a registered nurse, so I didn't really have a whole lot of trouble finding work. But my feeling is that on some of these people that are coming in illegally, I think we need to be lenient towards the refugees. And I think that these kids that were brought here as children and raised here should be given some consideration towards citizenship. I mean, if this is all they know, I don't think it's fair to send them back to whatever country they came from just because, you know, somebody wants to be hard-nosed about it. As far as the rest of it, I also know how much it costs to come over as a legal immigrant, and I can understand in a way why some people try and come across illegally because it's an expensive process, and it's gotten more expensive over the last few years. So, I mean, that's just my feeling on it.
All right, Kathleen. Thank you for the call. Appreciate it. So Professor David Miller, Kathleen came in legally from Canada. But we have a very cultural, you know, very similar with Canada. But when people come from countries that are very different than ours, how different is that? I mean, should a country like Donald Trump says, we should not allow Muslims into our country. We should have a ban on their immigration.
No, I think that there's no justification for selecting people either by race or religion or country of origin. I think the criteria should have to be the contribution that somebody can make to the country they're joining, the kind of skills they can bring, the kind of work they can do. And once people do come, I think it's reasonable that they should be asked to prepare themselves to become citizens of the new society. So one thing I discuss in the book is citizenship tests and people learning about the country and learning to some extent about its values as a way of preparing to become citizens in the future. So I think that is the right approach, and not to try and sort of guess at the point of entry what sort of politics or what kind of attitudes people are going to have, but choose them according to what they can contribute, and then have a good system of integrating them, placing them in the local community, and encouraging them to, in due course, apply to become citizens, to learn the things they need to be citizens, and to take simple tests to show that they've got that learning behind them. So that would be my approach. I think the Trump suggestion is a little outrageous.
But as you want a practical approach looking at the ethics of immigration, but we've seen that having a successful immigration program is very helpful to a nation. We're really short on time, but just your quick reaction to that.
Indeed, I think when it works well, immigration can be highly productive for both sides. And it's just a matter of getting the right system in place, getting the right methods of integration, and it can be very fruitful for both the immigrant and the receiving society.
Professor David Miller, he is the author of the book Strangers in Our Midst, The Political Philosophy of Immigration. He joins us over the phone from the UK. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much. It's been my pleasure.
And thanks for tuning us in. This is The Source on KSTX.